Well, we're going to find out in a moment what Mitchell Lewis, the astrologer, has to say about the future. Some of his past predictions that he went on record with in 1999. He predicted that the Republicans would win the White House for 8 years, followed by an ineffectual four-year Democratic president. For a year in advance, he predicted a horrific terrorist attack on U.S. soil when Saturn opposed Pluto near America's ascent in September 2001. When oil, as he mentioned, was trading at $32 a barrel, he called for it to reach $100 a barrel. He predicted oil would drop and rise once more. He predicted that the exact top of the housing market would be July of 2005, and he saw the subsequent collapse of the entire mortgage business. In 2007, he predicted there'd be a stock market crash in late October or early November of 2008. And he also called on his second crash in Feb or March of 2009. It was pretty right on. We'll find out what he sees in the future, and we'll take your calls on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, Mitchell Lewis, before we go to calls, let's have at it. What do you see in the future?
Well, I don't think the euro is going to make it.
Okay.
I think by 2013, when Pluto sits on top of the sun and Uranus squares the sun of the euro, it's going to be put under severe pressure, and I don't think that the Germans are going to be able to bail out the rest of Europe. And if, you know, so-called pigs, Portugal, Ireland, Italy, Spain, and Greece actually fail, you're going to have millions of people living in a depression. And, you know, like I said before, George, I'm an optimist, and I hope I'm wrong with some of my predictions. I really am. I didn't want the stock market crash either, but...
What's your percent, by the way, of accuracy?
I don't know. I never really pay attention, but with the big calls, it's pretty damn good. I mean, I don't day trade anymore. I don't care if silver's going up today or down tomorrow. That makes you nauseous. The really important things in our society, I seem to have been... I'd say 75, 80% accurate at least. Almost all of my major predictions have come true, and I have quite a following of people who have watched it and read my newsletters for years and gone to my lectures and whatnot. So I know that I have a legitimate claim to these predictions. I don't look at it that way. I'm more concerned with paying attention to what's happening, trying to get my people and my friends to do the right thing. I have a number of people who got out of the stocks at 14,000 because they believed me.
You save them. You save them a lot of money.
I saved them their retirement fund. I also have family members who ignored me and didn't want to pay attention, and they held on to Ford and General Motors. You know, what can you do? People are going to listen or they're not going to listen. And I don't claim to be right all the time. I'm not a seer. I'm a hardworking astrologer who spends a great deal of time, you know, doing the homework. And so the predictions seem to be right. And the euro looks pretty bad. It was born January 1st, 1999 at midnight in Frankfurt. And it has a 10-degree Capricorn sun, which is about to get slammed by the Pluto-Uranus. And that looks pretty bad for it. And, of course, if the euro goes... Look, there's another possibility, too, George. They may very well be heading into complete and total globalization. It'll take time, but they're going to try and make a single currency, and they could use the current recession/depression as an excuse, as they're using it for an excuse for a number of other things. Now, I'm not even going to say how I feel one way or another about that. Let the chips fall where they may. That's not an astrologer's job. It's my job as an individual, perhaps. But as an astrologer, I just look towards the future and see what's what. America is also under tremendous, tremendous pressure until 2016 at the very earliest. And we're going to have a couple of nuclear incidences in our country, too. I don't know if they're going to be if it's going to be an attack or if it's going to be an accident. My feeling is it's probably an accident, but we're pretty much prone right now for any kind of an attack. And if it were to happen, it would be really devastating. And like I say, until 2016, when Pluto is done opposing America's sun and Uranus is done with the square, things are going to be unstable. That's why whoever gets elected in 2012 is going to have their hands full.
Sure. Do you still see the wars in Iraq or Afghanistan continuing?
The war in Afghanistan, there's going to be more wars. We're going to be stretched out to the point where we're either going to have to walk away from situations or spend, you know, currency of all sorts that we do not have. I think the war in Afghanistan is unwinnable because I don't think anybody's ever won a war in Afghanistan. And if you go back and you read or you look at the movie The Man Who Would Be King with
Sean Connery.
Sean Connery, yeah. Right? Remember that? They were in Afghanistan.
Yep. And Michael Caine was with them.
Michael Caine was a wonderful movie, but the English tried to win and the Russians tried to win and we're trying to win and it's not a normal country. It is what it is. It's almost untenable. But like I said, we have a tremendous amount of pressure on our country for a number of years yet. The economy is not going to get better. Unemployment is going to remain high. If the Republicans are allowed to strip away the entitlement programs that they're trying to do, we are going to have civil unrest. How could you not?
Mm-hmm. Trapped between a rock and a hard place, aren't we?
Yeah, and and it's not going to lighten up for quite a number of years. But again, even in the Deep Depression, people made a living. People, in fact, if anything, they got closer. I think adversity makes us closer. It makes us love. It makes us understand that love is more important than stuff, which is, you know, I mean, again, I'm a bit of a romantic, but I've always felt that it's more important how we treat each other than what we do for a living.
December 21st, 2012, Mayan calendar end date. Anything happening?
Well, that's a touchy subject because so many people believe that something will happen. I don't think that the polar things shift. I don't think that the world ends. I don't think that a comet comes and crashes us. I think that what it represents truthfully, first of all, from what I can understand, it really does just represent the move to another calendar, to another phase of consciousness. And we are in a place of changing, altering consciousness right now. It's hitting the individual, and it's certainly hitting the collective. I think I don't think that day is going to be anything, frankly, George. I think, though, that it is a very important year. 2012, in general, is simply, it's a transitional year. It's setting us up for a long time to come. And if we don't handle it properly, then we're going to have a mess. And if we are able to handle it properly, again, I'm an optimist. If we are able to pull our collective heads out of our collective you-know-whats, we can turn things around. And I think that by the end of 2012, because 2013 looks like a particularly difficult year.
Well, you know what I find remarkable too, Mitchell, is, you know, when you just think of that year, 2012, I mean, my God, the fact that we're living in this time period right now.
I know.
It sounds like it really sounds like we're living in the future. You know, did you ever as a kid think about the year 2012 and even the remote possibility you'd be around then, even though you probably knew you would? I mean, nobody would think that far out.
Future Shock. Remember the book?
Yeah.
That's where we're at. I think we're all having a bit of a collective breakdown because we don't know what to do with it all. We've got phones next to our ears. We've got devices that can put us in touch with anybody. My best friend lives in Brazil. She just moved there with her husband, and she's still my best friend. I talk to her every day on Skype.
Skype's
pretty,
a great tool.
Pretty remarkable. I know. They're all great tools. Look, the Internet is a mixed blessing. You know, it's tremendous in what it's done, but it's also, as you know, damaged some things, especially the music business, if you want, what it did to the music business.
Well, you have to adjust.
Right. You have to adjust to the new inventions and to the new situations, and you have to have hope. The bottom line is you've got to believe in yourself, in what your potential is. If you're living in bad times, you'd be a better person. If you're living in better times, you'd be more generous. You do the best you can.
Do you still see, technological advances continue to grow?
I think that that's going to slow down quite a bit because Uranus rules technological advances. And when Uranus went into Aries last time, two major things happened. Movies started to talk, and television was patented.
Huh. Okay.
Farnsworth didn't make a dime off of television because the patents ran out
right by
the end of the Second World War.
Well, why do you think, though, it's going to wane a little bit?
Because we've been through the cycle. And as Uranus goes through Aries now, there will be a bit more innovation, especially in the medical fields, where now they can diagnose things almost like Star Trek. You know, there was a great show how William Shatner invented the future or something, how all these geeks grew up watching Star Trek and invented everything that was on Star Trek, including a flip phone that you can call, you know, beam me up, Scotty, and they're going to continue with those things. But the major advances, the major things that have occurred are pretty much what has done. They're going to tweak them. They'll get better. There'll be better, you know, iPhones and the rest of this. But pretty much the inventions, I think, have been done for the time being. Now we need to assimilate them. You can't keep inventing things until the species learns how to use them. So you get to a point where you say, okay, that's enough invention. Now what are the practical uses of this? Besides, you know, sticking a phone next to your ear and walking down and running into people on the street, there's got to be much more that comes out of this. And I think that we have only begun to skim the surface of what the inventions we've already gotten can do. So that's where I think the innovation comes, not from new inventions, but from the use of the ones that are already there.
We'll talk more about your predictions. Let's take some calls. Donnie is in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, east of the Rockies. Hi, Donnie. Go ahead. Donnie? Well, there is no Donnie anymore. Donnie is gone. But David is in Barstow, California, west of the Rockies. Go ahead, Dave.
Hi, George.
Hey.
Hey, hi to your guest. He's a wonderful guest.
There you go, Mitchell.
Yes, I'm Mitchell, right? Okay, thank you. Yes, I wanted to say about this euro, the debacle of the euro, and I think I have realized something, that what happened was that all these countries that are failing because of the euro, now beginning to realize that when they gave up their original currency, they lost their sovereignty. And when they lost their sovereignty, now what's going to happen is that the United Kingdom, Great Britain, they did not lose their currency. The Queen of England made sure that the euro would not be their monetary system so that she still has her face on the pound. That's why the pound is in the stock market, right?
Well,
so now all these countries that have given up their sovereignty are screwed because Greece, Italy, and all the Italy had the lira. Greece had, I don't know what they called, the drachma, whatever their currency was. They don't have that anymore. And that was the sovereignty. That's what every country had. That's why Hitler was eventually taken out, as I heard Jim Mars say on your show one time, because he didn't want to borrow money from the central bank and pay the interest.
Mm-hmm.
So now all these countries owe all these interests, the central banks, it's like this housing thing that the banks own all these houses, now they can't sell them, or they have to sell them for really cheap. So I wanted to ask you, you know, how do you think of that, you know, and because I really think that the euro is going to fail, and there's going to be
I agree with you, absolutely, David. The euro is going to fail.
And what will we have in place of it, Mitchell?
Well, a great deal of pain. My concern about the euro failing is the human cost. Look,
is that better for the dollar that it does fail?
No, the problem is that everybody is trying to globalize, which may or may not succeed right now. My gut feeling is eventually, if humanity is going to survive, we may have to have some sort of a world government. It's not something I particularly want, don't get me wrong. I am not much of a centralist like that. But I think humanity has reached a point where we don't have 50 or 100 years to get our act together anymore. If we don't change the environment, if we don't fix certain problems that we have, we're not going to be around. And it's as simple as that. So if our species is not completely self-destructive, we're going to have to make some sort of a major change. The euro failing, or China slipping back into a recession, or America's dollar collapsing, or anything else affects the whole world. It's not going to be an isolationist thing. If the euro fails, the dollar will probably rise because flight to safety.
Sure, no doubt. That's why I say it helps the dollar in one respect.
But temporarily only.
All right.
That's the problem.
Let's go to Elizabeth in Ontario on the international line. Go ahead, Elizabeth.
Hi, George. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, my pleasure.
Mitchell, I'm a romantic, too. I have a terrible crush on George, but tonight I want to know what to do with my money. Do I put it in gold and silver like a lot of people tell us to do on Coast to Coast?
Well, you know,
you could give it to George. I'm kidding. Just kidding. Just kidding.
When it comes to gold and silver, Elizabeth, I got a little bit of a problem. My years of on the floor of the exchange, I watched, so many of my friends make a fortune in a commodity and not get out when it starts to collapse. Like the dot-com problem.
Right.
How many friends of mine lost every dime. They refused to believe it wasn't going to go back up again, even though I and economists would, you know. So gold and silver are a bubble. There's no question about it. The question is, of course, does the bubble go up to $5,000 an ounce?
That's right. Right. Yeah.
Look what happened the last couple of weeks in gold. People who got in recently got killed. If they didn't have the money for their margin or they weren't holding physical gold, they were bounced out of the trade. So even if gold turns around and runs up to $3,000, $4,000, they were bounced out. It's not a matter of whether you should hold gold or silver. It's a matter of whether you can afford to and whether you're willing to take the pain if it drops down hundreds of dollars and then turns around. It is a bubble. The book Aftershock talks about bubbles. And these authors were very, very good. In fact, the funny thing is that their timing almost exactly matches mine.
You have to have the staying power, Mitchell, don't you?
Right. You need money to make money unless you're, you know, you want to invest for your future. If you're afraid that the world's going to collapse and you're not going to be able to eat, then go out and buy some gold coins, put them in a safe deposit box, and God forbid you have to use them to pay for your bread. In terms of investing in gold and silver, I never tell people, by the way, unless I'm working an account, whether to buy or sell. I won't do day trades for anybody because I don't want to be wrong. And anybody can be wrong on a day trade.
Day trades are dangerous.
Terribly so. And even a position trade, because you might tell somebody, yes, buy this, but not realizing they don't know how to trade. And they could get bounced out of the trade or lose money anyway. So I would be extremely cautious about buying futures in gold and silver. If you want to buy physical gold and silver.
And hold on to it.
Yeah.
And hold on.
That's something else.
Yeah. Let's go to Carlos Carson, California, on the wild card line. Carlos, take it away.
Yes. Good evening, George. And Mr. Mitra, got a couple of questions for you.
Sure.
I noticed that certain critical disastrous events occur on the 11th day of the calendar months. We had our 9/11 here, and then we had Spain's terrorist attack on 3/11/2004, exactly 911 days from our 9/11. And then, of course, we had Japan's 3/11 recently, and Haiti 1/11.
You're right.
Hey, is there perhaps intervening hand, the sinister hand, manipulating events so that they happen exactly on these astrological dates?
Very funny, and my book is called Murder in the 11th House.
Yeah, exactly.
11 is a very important number today. from an astrological point of view, I don't pay much attention to numerology because I find it distracts me. I know some very good numerologists who do some tremendous work. I look at the aspects, Carlos, and if, in fact, I see something like this, and this is great information, by the way.
Mitchell. We're at the bottom of the hour. We're going to come right back and talk with you about these 11 dates, 11-11. What does that mean? We'll be back. Well, next hour, we'll have open lines for you on Coast to Coast AM. When we come back, more of your calls and more talking with the astrologer Mitchell Lewis on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, we're with astrologer Mitchell Lewis. Mitchell, we were talking about this ominous day of 11-11-11 all over the place. What does that all mean when so many events are tied to that date?
Well, George, I honestly don't know. I'm not a numerologist. I think there's synchronicity all over the place.
Sure.
You know how to look for it. And in fact, that's what makes a difference a lot in our lives. Frankly, it's a matter of being awake and paying attention. The gentleman who called just now was obviously aware of many things, and he's paying attention to a lot of stuff, and he's putting, you know, one and one together, so to speak, making 11 out of it. I honestly don't know. I don't have a feeling one way or another because astrology doesn't work that way. I think that there is a great deal of I don't want to say coincidence. I'd rather say synchronicity. because I don't believe in any kind of coincidences. I don't think there is such a thing.
Neither do I. Do you think, though, with some of these dates, those people responsible for events would pick it because they're just tied into things like that?
Well, I think 9/11 was picked on purpose. By the way, are you aware of the fact that the daily number on that date in New York and Texas,
yeah, that was
911?
Yeah, that's strange, too.
Right, yeah. I mean, I think that 9/11, also, if you look at the chart of 9/11, it's the chart of a successful, not a catastrophe, it's the chart of a success, because for them, it was a tremendous success. They never thought they would have the kind of success that they had on 9/11. The chart against America's chart, too, it's a very strange thing. I predicted it because Pluto and Saturn were in opposition, and that represents a power of a severe power struggle, and it was applying to America's ascendant.
Do you see anything dramatic happening, Mitchell, like landing on Mars or some great technology in medicine that breaks through, anything like that?
I think there's going to be a great deal of breakthroughs. I think there will be more medical breakthroughs, unquestionably. The technological stuff, like I said before, I think slows down. But there will be medical breakthroughs, absolutely. For one thing, excuse me.
Sure.
We have we have Neptune about to enter Pisces, which it will be for quite a number of years. Neptune rules Pisces, and Neptune rules medicine, all drugs, legal and illegal, doesn't make any difference to astrology. It rules spirituality. It has a great deal to do with the empathy that humanity feels. And as Neptune gets into Pisces, that empathy is going to become stronger. Well, you know, we're in a terrible downturn economically, so you're going to feel for your fellow man. And the Pisces energy is going to, perhaps, I'm hoping, like I said, I try to be an optimist, I'm hoping that this Neptune in Pisces will turn the hearts of some people. Because if your heart changes, then your attitude changes, and then your actions change. And I think that this is going to be a period of, well, one of the problems, of course, is that a lot of people, the Republicans in particular, feel that we should leave all of the charity and the rest of the help to religious organizations and to think, you know, to community organizations. I don't happen to agree. I think government was put together for a purpose, and the purpose is to govern all of us through the collective wealth and the rest of it. I know I've been called a socialist and a communist before. It wouldn't surprise me again if it was done. But it's still the individual that makes the difference. And you put Neptune in Pisces, and I care more about my fellow man than I do about making money. That's only going to happen after they change. Look, for a long time, our society was about accruing wealth. We didn't care about anything else but making more and more money. And now with the crash, many people are not going to do that.
Or can't do that.
No, there's an entire generation that's going to be unemployed.
Let's go to Scottsdale, Arizona. Sherry, you're with us. Hi, Sherry. Good morning.
Hi, good morning, George. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Good. Hi, Mitchell. Great guest tonight, George.
Hi, Sherry. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Well, I was going to originally ask about the stock market, but I am a Pisces, and I do have a lot of love in my heart for humanity. So I guess my bigger concern, rather than where the stock market is headed, I think it's just headed straight down, and maybe you can confirm that. But I think I'd like to ask a different sort of a question on maybe a little more specifically on where you see our country headed. I mean, you said generally that, you know, it doesn't look good for us and that you see nuclear events. So what should we best do to prepare most Americans to really make sure that we can be prepared to help take care of each other?
Okay, well, the nuclear events, of course, could be, they may not be, Sherry, I'm not saying that they're going to blow up Pittsburgh. Well, I think we're going to have some accidents with our nuclear plants, and I think that there is could be a nuclear situation where, you know, somebody gets their hands on a dirty bomb or something like that. But I don't think that we're heading for total destruction. And by the way, the stock market... It's a dog. You don't want to put your money in the stock market. I don't care if it runs up 1,000 points from here. It's going to collapse again and again and again until we get it ready. So just to answer that.
And I guess nobody's got the ability to time it, you know, in, out. That's dangerous.
No, you can't. George, you can't. You're day trading. You could be off by 5 minutes and lose your shirt. That's no way to trade. What you do is you trade a trend. The trend is your friend.
And what's the trend now? It's down.
It's down.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You short this market.
That's the trend. No matter what happens, these periodic spikes, it's still down. This trend
that's
is
right.
down.
In fact, what you do is when the periodic spikes happen, that's where you sell. The problem, of course, is not in the call. It's in the trade.
That's right.
You can buy puts saying that the market's going to go down, and they could run it up and push you out of the trade again, and then it collapses.
Yeah.
Or the put can expire because, they run out of time.
That's right. You didn't have enough money to hang in there.
Right. So, but Sherry, to answer your question, I think that what happened during the last depression in the 30s, based on the movies and the books and the things that I've read and studied up on, that there was a different feeling in this country, that people did help each other. They felt for their neighbors. Certainly, there was a lot of crime. There was a lot of this, a lot of that. But when everybody's rich and running and accruing and worried about their next car and their next suit and the next, they don't give a
easy,
damn
easy,
about each other.
Easy.
But when you're in a downtrend and you suddenly see a dear friend of yours who's been unemployed for 18 months or longer, and the unemployment is running out, and they don't know what to do with their two children, and then what, if you don't feel, you're not alive, you're not a human. And these periods of time are necessary for humanity to reestablish itself as human. And I don't like, depressions or recessions or anything else any more than anybody else does. It hurts us all financially, but it may help us spiritually. And it's a shame that humanity has to be that way. We're very stubborn. We don't change until we're in pain. I found that in my individual clients, and I found that in the collective.
That's so true. Let's go to West Covina, California. Hello, Lisa. You're up with us.
Hi, George. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
And Mr. Lewis, I have one particular question because I'm kind of thinking about February and Israel. Could you please give us a little enlightenment in that area?
Well, Israel is under a great deal of pressure right now, and the pressure is not going to lighten up for a while. I don't think you'll have a problem in February. Let me get my ephemeris out for 1 second, Lisa.
Sure.
I just want to take a look at February here against Israel's chart.
You got the whole thing charted out.
Oh, I brought a lot of charts with me.
Right.
I wanted to be prepared for whatever.
Got them all spread out over the table, I bet.
You bet. Oh, come on. Sometimes I have hundreds of charts at a time. It's ridiculous. I can't even find what I'm looking for. And when I do my lectures, they're very funny because sometimes I say to people, you got to wait a minute. I'll be right with you. No, I see a trine between Saturn and Neptune. Neptune gets into Pisces in early February, and Israel has Neptune right near the ascendant. I don't think so. I think you'll be fine. I think that Israel, look, the whole Middle East situation is not going to be resolved particularly easily or maybe ever, but there's bad times and there's better times. I think you'll be fine in February. I would, of course, like to see your chart to compare it to, rather than just Israel's, because that's what, astrologers do. They like to look at as much information as they can get. But for the moment, I don't see an attack on Israel in the next few months. Maybe a little minor attack, from Gaza or whatever, but I don't see a major war coming. And I don't think that the Palestinians are going to get their state this year either. It's going to be a little while before that gets worked out. So I think you'll be okay.
Okay, let's go to St. Thomas, Ontario. James is on our international line. James, go ahead.
Yes, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, I just want to ask him two questions. First of all, what is this prophecy for Canada? And as well, does any of his prophecies ever line up with the Bible?
All right. Canada, well, you see anything happening there? And tell us about the Bible.
Right. Well, Canada looks fine. Of all, it's actually in a fairly good place, all things being equal. It was not exposed too terribly to the mortgage meltdown. And it's always kept its sovereignty from America. And I think that the Canadian dollar is, well, it's stronger than it's been when I was trading. Certainly, it's, you know, it's eclipsing the American dollar. I think Canada looks pretty good. The Bible, the prophecies of the Bible depends on how you interpret them, especially when it comes to timing. You remember, astrology is primarily a tool of timing, as well as interpretation. But I know that when Saturn opposed Uranus, there would be a stock market crash, and there was. The Bible doesn't give us timing; it gives us a chance to interpret it, especially through some of the, the biblical, called, where they search through the Bible for the information, and it was a fantastic show I saw on this recently. I don't
the Bible code.
The Bible code, right, exactly. I don't use the Bible per se with astrology. I use it more as a collective barometer. We go through periods of time that coincide with what the Bible says if we interpret it that way, but because the Bible doesn't give you timing, it's very difficult to do it except through the Bible code. So I see. Look, again, I'm not a doomsday prophet. I don't see any purpose to it. If you're wrong, you look like an idiot, and if you're right, who's there to pay you? So I don't believe in end of the world prophecies. I don't believe in stuff like that. If it happens and I'm caught in it, well, there you go. I'm in the rapture, and I'll go up to heaven.
So be it. Let's go to Laverne, California. First time caller. Hey, Barbara, go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Uh-huh.
I wanted to ask Mitchell, he had mentioned in passing that he saw martial law being instituted in the United States. I wanted to find out the timing of that. And if somebody wanted to leave the country at that time, does he see a particular place like others have recommended to go to South America?
Like a safe haven. Okay. And what causes the unrest? Is it the civil unrest, the barometer here for them to do all this?
From my point of view, it's the Pluto Uranus square that's causing I think will lead to social unrest and martial law. I think the martial law will be implemented in particular areas. I don't think the entire country is going to do it. I think there's going to be such unrest. Look, we have tent cities, for God's sakes, in America. There are people living under bridges that were middle-class families. The whole thing is falling to pieces, and there will be social unrest, and there will be the martial law. In terms of leaving the country, well, I have a number of friends who've gone to Brazil. Brazil is in a big bubble right now of their own, and they're doing terrifically, and they will do great until the Olympics are over.
I'm not leaving, Mitchell. I'm toughing it out.
No,
I'm staying right here, and I'm going to make this work. I'm going to fight. And fight. I'm not leaving.
I'm with George. I'm with you. I'm with you. I'm an American through and through. I love this country, and I love its potential. And I think that if we can get back on track, we can come right back to the top again. My concern is if this is the end of the American empire or not. And I have not come to a complete conclusion yet. I know I've studied Rome's fall, Britain's fall, Constantinople's fall, lots of different things. And I see certain configurations that occur when an empire crumbles. And America has some of those symbols happening now, but not all of them. I don't know. South America is an interesting place. It's, you know, after living in America your whole life, if you have, and you go to a country, you know, that's not as modernized, you might be very surprised. You might really not like it. You might like it a lot, but if you're really an Americanized person, you might find it rather difficult.
And they may not like you, Mitchell. They may not like you. The martial law thing's one thing, but being in another country, they may not want you there.
Well, you know something? A lot of places don't really... Americans don't have the greatest perspective on things, and it shows up. Remember the movie and the book, The Ugly American? We need to change our attitude. And when you go down to Brazil, for example, where some of my dear friends are, they tell me that, you know, they're treated nicely because they make friends, but that down there a lot of people don't want the Americans coming down with what they perceive as our attitude and our perspective, and they blame us a great deal for what happened because this mortgage mess took the whole world down, not just our country. Iceland, for God's sakes, went into complete bankruptcy because they were in our mortgage mess. So, you know, there is something to be said for that. I don't know. I'm still looking for a nice place by the beach in America or maybe the Caribbean where I can buy a little home. I wouldn't want to leave America. I wouldn't want to.
South Beach is hot. It's a great spot.
I love South Beach. I do. I love my
property's pretty cheap down there now, too.
I know, especially now. You can get a house for nothing. It's terrific.
All right, so what do we face over the next few months as we lead into the end of this year? Anything? See anything on the horizon? And then we've got a minute left. Go ahead.
Okay, the markets are going to continue to be weak. They're going to, you know, there'll be rallies and whatnot, but they're not going up particularly. The real trouble, George, starts in 2012. 2013 is the year that I'm most concerned about. I think we could have a collapse of the euro, a collapse of the dollar, a real mess. That's when gold may spike up again. but again, I'm an optimist. And I think that if we can pull our collective consciousness together, we can prevent an awful lot of this stuff that I or other astrologers or other psychics would see. So, you know, I try to be optimistic about it. But this next bunch of months, you stay out of the stock market. It'd be ridiculous to go into it as an investment. If you're a day trader, have a good time. And buying
gold, might be better off going to Vegas if you're going to day trade.
You really might be. You got slot machines there that pay out 98%.
that's
you're
better.
Not going to get that.
That's better than day trading. Mitchell Lewis's novel, his very first novel, Murder in the 11th House, how he weaves in astrology in that. I shall be back in a moment as we go into those open lines on Coast to Coast AM.